Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. The name of this program is titled World Watchers. It's broadcast number 699, April the 29th, 1985. Another month gone by just too fast. The President of the United States, Ronald Reagan, is a sandwich. He's a sausage between two pieces of bread being squeezed at both ends. One is Fritz Kramer and Henry Kissinger representing the Fourth Reich. The other is Richard von Weizsäcker and Helmut Kohl representing the Fourth Reich. Germany in America, Germany in German, in Germany, the President of the United States in between, and the relish on the bun is, of course, Richard Nixon with his long contacts to the Germans in America and bringing them to America and in Germany also. Now, last week after the broadcast in the news following, it was like Tuesday or Wednesday, was an article about Helmut Kohl, who said that he had reassured Ronald Reagan that he would not back out of the demand that he visit Bitburg, and that there was no way to change that itinerary. There would be a way, but there's no way, and it's very important to recognize that there is no way they're going to change that commitment. Now, a Kohl advisor added, and this was in the San Francisco Chronicle, it was April 23rd, in quotes, "If one tries to act symbolically, one has to choose the symbols carefully. If one tries to act symbolically, one has to choose the symbols carefully," end quote. Well, the symbols of this particular Bitburg piece of geography was the staging area for the Battle of the Bulge. It was the area where the Germans, the hierarchy of the SS, would meet the United States and be welcomed open-armed. And they would decide already at that moment, it had been decided that their real project was to take on the Soviet Union. It involved a cast of characters that I've been talking about for the past years, Prince Bernhard of the SS. It worked for IG Farben and married Queen Juliana in Holland. Henry Kissinger, the advisor to all media networks at the present time, and former Secretary of State, National Security Advisor, the roving ambassador for the Germans, William Casey, the CIA director, and Fritz Kramer. These names are so familiar to some of you, I'm going to go on now. Senator Howard Metzenbaum urged Chancellor Kohl to back down on the demand of our President of the United States with a quote, "Please take our president off the hook." And Helmut Kohl said no. Another quotation in the newspaper was, "I don't think the president of the United States should go to a German cemetery to honor German soldiers who died killing American soldiers in the service of the greatest tyrant of our time, Adolf Hitler." That was from Senator Cranston. He said, "There are graves of SS troops in the cemetery that make it unsavory act intolerable." At one point, Cranston said, "Are Germany's ties to the United States so weak and to the West so weak, then so tenuous and so insecure and uncertain that Germany's price for reassurance is the humiliation of our president?" What they don't understand, the news media and Senator Cranston and Senator Metzenbaum and these well-meaning people, is that their relationship, Germany and Ronald Reagan's, is so secure that they don't care who screams and yells. They're going to meet anyway. Now, the teams have lined up a lot of people in the news media saying go, and a lot more saying don't go than go. I want to run down a few of those with you, because I mentioned last week the letter that I sent out, and during the past week I sent out more letters. And instead of sending to members of our Congress, who so far have been ineffectual in most things that they bumble through, I sent them to the foreign press. I'm not going to read all the newspapers I sent them to at this time, but I sent to the Frankfurter paper, the German paper in Frankfurt, Germany. I sent one to the German General News Service. The reason I'm citing these for you is I think it had some effect, and I'll tell you why. I sent it to Il Tempo in Rome. I sent the letters to Izvestia in Moscow and to La Libre in Belgium. All the major newspapers of the foreign news services that I had time and postage stamps to mail out. La Suisse in Geneva, Le Soir in Brussels, Le Monde in Paris, the London Daily Express, the London Guardian, the London Observer, the London Sunday Times, Maguire in Budapest. I sent it to TASS in the Soviet Union, and another one in Zurich, Switzerland, and several of them in Germany, newspapers explaining why Ronald Reagan, it was really asking him not to go until we see Fritz Kramer, but the letter was certainly self-explanatory, and many of you have a copy, and those of that you don't, I will be sending it to you. I just have been busy sending it to these public officials. Now, Robert E. Hunter, Director of European Studies from Georgetown Center, said he didn't think Ronald Reagan should go. Ronald Reagan is making it a Jewish issue. Didn't I help get the Jews out of Ethiopia for Israel? Big deal. Don't I help get the Jews out of the Soviet Union? Sure, you do the Wallenberg movie, you do the USSR, because everything is geared anti-Soviet, and the Jews have been used. This Save the Soviet Jews has been a front for continuous anti-Semitism in stirring up the Soviet Union and making it a Jewish issue. Governor Dumakian in California, the heir apparent, if Kissinger doesn't squeeze him out, one of them of the Republican Party, has argued with the president publicly, don't go. Reverend Jerry Falwell, one of the biggest supporters and a consultant before the elections took place, said don't go. Reverend Billy Graham said this week, don't go. Before I sent the letter, and it was on national television, I had no influence, the Senate leader of his own particular party, Robert Dole, said don't go. Again, I want to repeat, Ronald Reagan and the Germans want to make this a Jew problem, a Jewish issue, to stir up more anti-Semitism that is always there. None of these people, except several that I'll mention here, who've played their game all along, are happen to be Jewish. Now, I'm going to read you, and you probably read the articles this morning, just this morning, of Mr. Rommel, the son of the Desert Fox, who now has a position in Germany. He was Field Marshal Erwin Rommel's son. Is Manfred Rommel is the son, the father, pardon me, was the Field Marshal of World War II. He's the mayor of Stuttgart, and he said to Helmut Kohl, cancel. And another one who interestingly said cancel was Mr. Strauss, the well-known Nazi in Germany, the most outspoken chairman. He's the chairman of the Social Union Party of the Bavarian arm of Kohl's Christian Democrats. He's a rival of Kohl's. He's farther right than Kohl. Now, these aren't Jew boys. These are farther right than Helmut Kohl that are saying, don't go to Bitburg. And I think that my letter to the German press, Swiss press, to Hungary, Belgium, Russia, Britain, France, and Italy, over 100 letters, just the media alone, had some influence, and I'll tell you why, on why Rommel and Strauss say, don't go. Also, National Security Advisor Robert C. McFarlane, otherwise his top aide, one of the two, sent a message to Helmut Kohl, don't go to that cemetery. Now, under McFarlane is Sven Kramer, the liaison of the National Security to Ronald Reagan. I'm talking about his father now in these letters with Henry Kissinger. Is he German? Is he the mole from Germany in our Pentagon all this time in intelligence? McFarlane said don't go. He also has Mr. Dobryansky's daughter working with him, Paula Dobryansky. Lev Dobryansky is the ambassador to the Bahamas for Ronald Reagan, and I will be doing more, hopefully this week, and if not, certainly next week, on the links of Ronald Reagan and Lev Dobryansky to the Waffen-SS and the responsibility of bringing this country earlier in the 50s and now trying to stop the deployment of Nazi war criminals around the world and to stop the investigation of the Office of Special Investigators in Washington, D.C. McFarlane, the boss of Sven Kramer, and Paula Dobryansky has said, don't go. The symbolism, as I say, as they said it, and I'm quoting again, is very important. What is the symbolism of Bitburg? The symbolism is that the United States president, speaking for Americans, forgives the Waffen-SS. The symbolism is that the United States president and the Americans and the veterans living or the others in this country will forget the bulge. You get help in forgetting the Battle of the Bulge, because many times I refer to the congressional hearings on the Dachau trials. There were the Nuremberg trials and the Dachau trials, and do you know there are not entire books on the defendants of the Dachau trial? Why? Because they were to be the builders, the SS, the choice elite were separated. The bankers were released by John J. McCloy, and the multinational weapons makers were released from the Nuremberg group, and the Dachau group were the SS, the Waffen-SS. that were are making tomorrow's Waffen possible, the Waffen SS. So the message of eliminating Fritz Kramer's name in every history after the war, after 1948, after he's sitting in that docket, he is nowhere in sight. The message is that the Malmedy didn't occur, the Ardennes didn't occur, the trial at Dachau didn't occur, and now we're going to this gravesite. Now, Ronald Reagan is taking advice, at least in the press, from Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger, the latest, and we'll go into that. Why do you think that he's in the trouble he's in right now? He misread, with the same advisors of Watergate, of Bay of Pigs, of Vietnam, he misread, as the others had, the state of mind, for example, in Cuba, when the people were behind Fidel Castro, and we thought if Americans invaded, the arms would be waving, welcome, welcome, and the Bay of Pigs would be a success. They misread the minds of the Cubans. It's the 10th anniversary since Vietnam, and you see discussions and interviews, and the main point about Vietnam was that we misread the minds of the Vietnamese people. There's some very good person, I think his name is Mr. Cleveland, on Meet the Press yesterday with Marvin Kalb, saying that we didn't study history, we didn't know history, and we didn't know about the French there, and what we did was to come in and take from the French, and it wasn't the Chinese that were a threat at all. And he was bemoaning the fact that history was not considered or taught, and that is the purpose of my broadcast, of my 14 years with you, to share with you is to lay the groundwork of the history where we move. And he did bring up the fact, a Vietnam veteran 10 years later. Well, we misread that. That's Mr. Fritz Kramer in the Pentagon, the plans officer, with Henry Kissinger behind all of these. We misread Vietnam. We misread Iran and giving the savak to the Shah and the excesses of the cruelty and the cutting off hands and legs and the torture. We misread Chile. It will probably go Marxist soon because Pinochet can't hold on forever. We've misread South Africa because even though there was an embargo, the CIA and the United States government have been sending oil and weapons and anything that South Africa wanted. So the same people behind all of that thought that after 40 years that the Americans would not remember anything about a little battle at the Battle of the Bulge. The symbolism is there for them. They know what's going on, but they didn't think people would care or feel that much. And as much as I criticize Simon Wiesenthal for some of the people he works with and for, and the compromises he made, he has done a monumental job of accumulating the facts and information, and you have to give him credit for that. And the memories have not faded away of any person alive at that time. Ronald Reagan wants to think that all of us have Alzheimer's disease, that we can't think, we can't remember. Well, that's too bad. We misread it. So while 10 years after Vietnam is being analyzed and dissected on every channel of the news media for this past weekend and currently this week, the very people that made the horrors of Vietnam, Henry Kissinger and coming in after LBJ with Richard Nixon with the secret Cambodia bombings and so forth, while we're talking about that on one channel, Nixon and Kissinger are telling the president to make this other mistake. Well, as it turns out, I think it's great that he's going to Bitburg because it makes all of my work much more understandable to you. Any of you that listen to the past broadcasts or continue listening in the future, you'll understand what I'm saying. Now, the Morning Chronicle, the San Francisco Chronicle, and most of your newspapers from the Washington Post, Nixon, Kissinger, back Reagan on Bitburg visit. Isn't that wonderful? And it says that Reagan will not bow to protests from groups representing the Jews or the veterans. Now, Jews and veterans are not important. Veterans fight the war, and if they're dead, they can't scream. And he singles it down, even though these top officials who are not Jews and who are not veterans, for whatever reason, and they have their reasons, are saying, change it, don't go. And I know what they are afraid of. It's identical to Watergate, when I broke the Watergate story with why was Martha Mitchell kidnapped. What they don't want is what May Bressel sent out. I take credit for calling Bernard Fensterwald, even though he's a CIA rat, the day the men were arrested at Watergate, and saying, hey, those are the fellows that killed Kennedy. I did it, and 9 months later, 7 months later, Fensterwald represented James McCord, and the story started to unfold. But the point is this, if I hadn't moved swiftly and sent those letters, I don't think that these people in Europe, the far-right conservatives who have the most to lose by the exposure of Fritz Kramer, those people want this to happen. Now, Henry Kissinger has to have it happen because his mentor and boss, Fritz Kramer, is co-partner with Daniel Graham of Star Wars. And Helmut Kohl, as I mentioned a few weeks ago, and we'll keep repeating, brings in the Star Wars story. The newspaper goes on, the San Francisco Chronicle tells about the importance of the relationships with West Germany. Henry Kissinger said, the visit has to go because of the importance of West Germany. The Senate vote didn't matter. The House of Representatives doesn't matter. And I ask you one more time, loud and clearly, is Henry Kissinger an American or a German? He was at the Battle of the Bulge. He has no hatred for Germans. He loves them. He works with them. He has no hatred and no anxiety about sitting on a hayloft while all this blood and gore was going on. He has the same mind state that Mark Lane had and Charles Gary down at Jonestown. One was shaving and one was eating his own cough drops while 900 people were dropping dead on the compound a few feet away. These people are ruthless, and Henry Kissinger is talking about West Germany. Since when are our ties with West Germany not secure? Do they really depend on a wreath, on a piece of geography called Bitburg? Do our relationships, our economic policies, our trade, our weapons, our space secrets, since when does all of that, after all the money and debt we gave to them, and went $100 billion in debt with Vietnam War, using people from the Waffen-SS, teaching our special forces how to slice and kill, since when does the relationship of Germany depend on this little piece of ground? Now, the president said he will spend 10 to 15 minutes with the Waffen-SS graves and even longer, maybe an hour, at Bergen-Belsen. Well, 47 Waffen-SS is 15 minutes, and 8 million representing the Belsen symbolism is something else. There were 1 million Waffen-SS, and there's only 47 in that grave. So there should be more time spent, because it wasn't just 6 million Jews that died in World War II or in the camps. So why not give it the proportion of minutes if it's 47 versus 8 million, 6 million Jews, and maybe 2 million political people that were carted off and from various countries who were anti-Nazi that were spent there? The logic is totally out. Then Richard Nixon said the credibility of future negotiations with the Germans is at stake. He's been wrong about every country he touched. He's been wrong about everything he affected. And while I have a lot of news here, I could go for a five-hour session with you on the Battle of the Bulge. I'm taking this very slowly because I want you to think it out loud and clear in context of what I've said before. Then coming into the act, as I said, is Mr. Franz Josef Strauss, the Bavarian minister, who says the preparations were unclever, in quotes. The results are embarrassing. The conservative Christian Democratic politician said, instead of Bitburg, go to the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier in Munich. Strauss said that if the cemetery stop was removed without a substitute, there would be bitterness. But if he goes to a substitute, he should go there. And again, quoting Mr. Rommel, he doesn't think the president of the United States should be there. And the editorials in Germany are stepping up. The staunch pro-government Bild Zeitung said, the bitter controversy has made the planned gesture of reconciliation impossible. Translated, it means, if you go there, the exposés of us and our ass in the fire will keep going, and they are not stupid. They know exactly what is going to come down. Now, speaking of Mr. Strauss, in the book on the murder of Embassy Row of Orlando Letelier, the Chilean who was in Washington, D.C., who was murdered with Ronnie Moffitt, I just want to read you two paragraphs from different pages from that book pertinent to where Mr. Strauss stands and George Bush, who was director of the CIA when they were killed. This is by John Dingell, D-I-N-G, not L, and Saul Landau. In late summer of 1975, Mr. Contreras, who was working with Michael Townley and the people who were to kill Orlando Letelier, organized their Latin American secret police and intelligence service into a cooperative anti-exile strike force to get and kill people overseas that we're talking about Mr. Pinochet. General Vernon Walters, deputy director of the CIA, met with Contreras at the CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia. Walters is now currently to be our ambassador to the United Nations. Walters was responsible for the CIA's liaison operations with foreign intelligence agencies and oversaw the CIA's organization and training assistance to DINA. That is the terrible police, similar to the SAVAK in Chile, the murderous DINA. As a matter of fact, a representative of the Chilean government just said last week that they wish they had murdered everybody in the stadium they rounded up instead of letting any of them out. Now, the second point on quoting this murder on Embassy Row is this. Late in September, Michael Townley, that's the American, and Callejas, C-A-L-L-E-J-A-S, and Paz, P-A-Z, loaded their rented car. This is before they came to the United States for the Letelier-Moffat murders. They received new orders from Contreras. They stopped in Munich, where DINA had cultivated contacts with former Nazi sympathizers associated with the Christian Union leader Franz Josef Strauss. From there, they went to Italy and Rome, then to Washington and the United States, where Letelier and Moffat were murdered. So George Bush was the CIA director when that murder took place. Mr. Strauss, the Nazi, is the person today who is saying, please don't go to Bitburg. It's going to open up events that we don't want to get into. And that must tell you a little bit about the network of our ambassador to the United Nations now, Mr. Strauss, the Nazi, George Bush, the vice president, and the relationship to Strauss and Rommel speaking up against the Bitburg trip. And I want to get to the Rommel story immediately. Incidentally, the Washington Times, the Reverend Moon paper, had an article April the 12th, one of the first, just when this conference controversy was breaking open, large letters, "The President is to honor German war dead." This is the Washington Times, April the 12th. And in that same newspaper, right next to that, is a full half page of Lee Harvey Oswald in the basement of the Dallas Police Department and Jack Ruby standing there shooting him. And then there's a drawing with a sketch around there that Mr. O'Leary, who works for Washington Times, was 3 feet from where, if 3 feet, maybe two, from where Lee Harvey Oswald was killed. And Oswald's death, of course, cut off the information on the Nazi connections to the murder of John Kennedy. And Reverend Moon, who owns this newspaper, his gang are linked to, closely associated with John Singlaub, the World Anti-Communist League. They're part and parcel of it, and use the Waffen-SS as members of the World Anti-Communist League. And I'll get into that, if not today, some more tomorrow. Also, the editor, new editor of the Washington Times, Mr. De Borschgrave, who I speak about often, again repeats a one-quarter page advertisement wanting $1 million to find Joseph Mengele. Now, the Reverend Moon paper and De Borschgrave asking for $1 million is identical to Mark Lane and Dick Gregory and Larry Flint running ads in the L.A. Free Press when it first came out and later reissuing it on the anniversary of Kennedy's death, when instead of publishing and pushing the JFK Nazi story, which Flint wanted to do right away, they used me to write that story. Then instead of advertising it or publishing it, they started pushing and republishing again the LA Free Press to give Mark Lane and Dick Gregory and the people at Flint's the information if anyone had on John Kennedy's assassination. So the same time that there's an article, "The President is to honor the war dead," I want to go in to what is the symbolism. When Cole's aide says, if one tries to act symbolically, one chooses the symbols carefully. The cast of characters in this Bitburg story will be going on, and I will update you with them and break them down chronologically because individually they're important, but in the order that it's breaking is even more important. Now, Bill Graham, the music promoter from San Francisco, spent $11,000 last week on 2 hours' notice. It was in the San Francisco Chronicle and San Francisco Examiner, asking the president not to go to Bitburg. And if he didn't back down by 11 or 12 o'clock in the morning or noon, he would have a rally in San Francisco, and several thousand people attended, even on a few-hour notice. Don't go to Bitburg. Well, Bill Graham's mother died in a concentration camp. His sister died in a concentration camp. And I immediately called their office because I thought maybe they would have a protest on the weekend on Saturday and I would have gone up there. But it was on 1 hour's notice. Now, all the years I've been on the air in San Francisco Bay Area, all the articles I've published, and he knows Paul Krasner, on the Nazi connections to Richard Nixon in 1972, the Nazi connections of the SLA certainly saturated the Bay Area with that when that story was breaking. On Nazis in America, there are links to Nazis in Germany. These people have sat around, these, many of them, all but you, my loyal listeners and subscribers to the tapes, have actually sat on their butts and have not come out of the closet. And now I'm asking them, all of them, or people you know who don't like fascism, get out of the closet now and expose this whole network and how it came down. We don't have to find a new cure for pneumonia. We already have penicillin. You don't need a new cure for polio. You have the Salk vaccine. I've done 21 years' work on this fascism. If there were people that got together, or even if Bill Graham had a concert, he could raise, imagine $11,000 for a two-hour moment of running this story in the paper. If he ran a concert, he could raise a few hundred thousand, if not a million, and put it into some kind of a fund to get these tapes and printed material to people around the world, because now they're ready. They may not have received it before, but I actually believe that they can't help but get the message now. Remember that article in the San Jose Mercury a few years ago? It was written March 28, 1982. It was an interview about Mae Brussel, and it was sort of the person who wrote it did a little tongue-in-cheek. I thought she was just too cute, again, for a little Jewish girl to be writing something. So it wasn't silly, but it wasn't really serious. Jill Wolfson. But on the top, she had in Cal Today, the magazine section, remember, Hitler is alive. And I said that Ronald Reagan is a front man for the forces of evil. That's Ronald Reagan, the sandwich between the two forces of evil. She did carry it in the magazine section, and I went on and explained his relationship to these very evil people who do want World War III and want the Waffen-SS to live. Now, the Central Council of Jews in Germany just last week, not 14 years ago and not 40 years ago, protested to Chancellor Helmut Kohl over the appointment of Walter Florian, F-L-O-R-I-A-N, to a high post in the West German government. Florian, 62, was named State Secretary of the West German Ministry in charge of food and agriculture. He joined the Waffen-SS in 1941, and the people living in Germany who recognized who he was were disappointed, and they said, isn't there any political post available to be filled with people who are not involved with Nazi organizations? Now, the sickness of the Ronald Reagan story and the Bitburg story was his first excuse, worming out of it, Mr. Sandwich Reagan, was that nobody in Germany over the age of 50, again, had a memory of what was going on. Well, there are some people who have memories going on, specifically involved with Bitburg. Here's a story, April 26, 1985. Germans send extra police for the SS reunion. Another story, April 20th. Nazi SS veterans will hold their reunion. This is at the same time when Ronald Reagan is arriving in Europe and while he's there. And another San Francisco Chronicle story, former SS troops to reconvene in Europe. Now, four groups are having their reunions, and you'll be reading about it. They're supposed to be dead. Ronald Reagan says they have no memory or they're dead. But the members meeting, one is the Death's Head. I mentioned briefly that the other day, I believe. The members of the SS Death's Head Division, there are over 250 veterans who will have their reunion this week. The other is the 1st Panzer Division. They'll meet May the 11th and 12th. The Death's Head meeting May 2nd to the 5th. 1st Panzer led the Ardennes Offensive in the Bitburg area, the staging area. Reagan will be visiting the staging area. Do you get your symbols clearly? They talk, Mr. Kohl, you have to choose your symbols carefully. The SS Liebsdart, Adolf Hitler's an elite group that aren't much different and part of the Death's Head. They will be meeting at the same time, May 11th to 12th, and the Hitler Youth, the children of the SS, who are not quite grown up, but goodness knows what ages, or maybe these were the children who are now grown, who are having their reunion, who hold government positions and otherwise. This is the current SS. This isn't the past. As I say, Lev Dobryansky, and I'll detail that. I did want to do the whole program on it, but I have to put it off till next week because of the Kissinger, Nixon, and the Mr. Strauss and Mr. Rommel pushing, two saying go, and the other two saying don't go. See, the role of Kissinger all his life, he can't back down and say don't go, because he arranged this with Fritz Kramer. I know they did, and so they can't back out. They have to be Americans supporting the president. We'll take a one-minute break and then get back onto the story of Bitburg, which we'll be doing for weeks to come, maybe for a year. I don't know. Ronald Reagan and the Waffen SS.